This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. In Washington, D.C. recently, and we ran into Mackenzie Bobeen with the U.S. Grains Council. She handles trade, especially with ethanol. So we'll break that down in just a moment. Again, Mackenzie Bobeen with the U.S. Grains Council. First off, let's look at beef prices expected to keep rising for the rest of this year. Matt McLaughlin is an economist at USDA.
Beef prices had generally been declining since late 2021, but in the last few months have started increasing again. And what we understand is that this is due to a tightening of supplies upstream, that there are fewer cattle to be brought to market. So our beef and veal price forecast is a 2.7% increase.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Mackenzie Bobeen, who is with the U.S. Grains Council. So good to see you.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be here.
So I want to make sure I get the title right. Director of Global Ethanol Export Development.
Correct.
You went, it's a good thing you don't put that on the back of a t-shirt where they charge you by the letter, but what's that really mean when you break it down?
Essentially, I think here at the U.S. Grains Council, you know, we are at the front end of being that advocate for ethanol exports within the global community. So we have a great domestic partnership, right, with so many of the domestic bioethanol entities, Renewable Fuels Association, Growth Energy, and all the various plants as well. So when they're looking, right, for export opportunities outside of our borders, this is where we have the resources. We have the on-the-ground representatives, and we're going out, we're telling your story, and we're creating markets, but also maintaining markets that we've already had access to.
What about your background? What prepared you to step into this role? Did you grow up in ag?
That is a great question. Yes, I would say very personal to me. So yeah, I grew up on a fifth generation family farm in southern Minnesota, actually, and then started my career in the biofuel space. So very first job right out of college was with the Minnesota Biofuels Association, where again, I think, you know, it's something where even growing up, you know, I would deliver corn to the local ethanol plant, you know, and it's something where it was made so tangible, like once I entered my professional career. So now I've been in biofuels for over 10 years now, in a wide variety of positions, but first time really on the export side and just so passionate about where we can go, you know, all the various boxes that our product hits, whether environmental, whether economic, whether national security based. It's almost like, what size t-shirt can we get you today, right, with our various international partners? And so we have a great story to tell. I always love telling it, and we're really on the front lines of that.
Well, when we talk about those export markets, what are the top export markets for U.S. ethanol?
Yeah, and it's really transitioned over the years, I would say, too. But currently, as we stand for this marketing year, Canada, of course, is the bright shining star, right? So Canada remains our top export markets for bioethanol. It's been historically a very consistent market, I would say, for us. I mean, it's reliable. There's a lot of trade synergy, right, just having the border there. But recently, Canada last year implemented its clean fuel regulation. So this is something where they're anticipating, again, rewarding and decarbonizing their transportation space through the increase of consumption of renewable fuels, which, of course, includes bioethanol and other components. So they anticipate, as a result of now this new program, they're going to hit a 15% ethanol blend by 2030. And we've really seen that playing out actually within the exports. So they're averaging anywhere from 40 to 50 million gallons every month. They're on track to maybe hit 700 million gallons this year. So very, very easily could see a billion gallon market potential within the near term.
So do you look at those markets in, let's say, tiers, like a tier group of tier one markets, tier two markets, tier three?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big world out there, right? So, I mean, almost unlimited potential. And so we have to be very careful and strategic, right, with like how we utilize our resources. So we really try and look at almost like a like effort versus time chart, and then how big potential markets are to see how we should go after them and where we should put pressure or apply opportunities. So for us, you know, we have a kind of tier one markets that we're focusing on this year. They could change, of course, given geopolitical environments, right? So just a couple years ago, Mexico and China were tier one markets, but they've kind of moved lower down now within tier two, just because, again, we kind of see some hurdles that are almost insurmountable in certain respects. But really excited about our tier one markets. So this year, we actually just moved up South Korea to a tier one market, as well as the European Union and the UK. So as we sit now, when we're talking about our export markets, the European Union is now our second largest market. So a relatively new market for us, I would say, too, only within the last like 5 years, but consistent year-over-year growth, record numbers last year, record numbers the year before, and they're on track to hit another record year. So we're seeing as more member states and just countries globally in general that are recognizing, right, ethanol has this viable decarbonization solution. So they're putting forth, right, like an E5 standard or an E10 standard, or even looking at E15, E20 higher. So we're there to say, hey, you know, the United States has had this implemented really since 2008. We're by far the largest producer. We're the largest consumer. So let's learn from our best practices. Let's maybe learn from maybe missteps that we took, etc. But look at what we're doing here on infrastructure and feasibility, on low carbon fuel standard creation, on, you know, even like new best practices that are either coming on the farm level or what's going on with plant technology. And let's now broaden that and see how we can develop it for like your specific country initiatives.
So we've talked about the shining stars, if you will, but I would imagine there are some challenges that exist for opening up markets. You mentioned Mexico and China had been kind of tier one and had kind of worked their way down. What are some of the challenges that you're seeing around the world?
Yeah, I would say probably one of the always the biggest, hindrances to like market penetration would always be like a tariff barrier, right? And this is something where U.S. Grains Council has very little control, right, over like affecting tariffs. Certainly, we have great partners within the U.S. government, with the USTR, with the Foreign Ag Service, and we work hand in hand with them on identifying market opportunities and like a sharing of resources. But tariff barriers are hard to overcome, right? So, I mean, we are, without a doubt, right, one of the cheapest octane sources on the planet, and we happen to be renewable at the same time. But even though we do have that cost advantage, when you add like a 30% tariff, when you add, you know, even like a 15, 20 cent tariff, etc., whether percentage based or whether cent based, sometimes erodes those economic advantages that we have, that maybe makes us less, you know, incentivized for a certain country that's looking at it. So those are always difficult to overcome. But not every country has that, right? So again, going back to that effort versus time chart, what are the low-hanging fruits? What countries can we do now? And then maybe allocating resources down the line for some of those other countries that, again, are big whales, right, are billion-gallon markets, but they have a 30% tariff, but, you know, maybe we'll tackle that down the line.
Well, you may have already answered the question. I hope not. Looking into the crystal ball, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's five, maybe it's 10, or just one of those moonshots. But when you start looking at the future, what are you excited about?
I just feel like there's so much momentum going on, right? So this is where, you know, almost 70 countries now globally have identified specifically bioethanol has a tool or a tactic to meet their Paris climate goals. So this is something where, you know, it's becoming more widely recognized and widely touted in their international community, right, to like decarbonize their road transport. So it's going to take an all-of-above approach, right? We're all trying to reach net zero. 2.0, but we are one of the probably like most easily implementable and then like cost effective solutions that's out there right now. So as more countries are seeing other stories success, right? Not just from the United States, but what's going on with Canada, what's going on with certain European member states, what's going on with certain Southeast Asia countries, right? It becomes like a broader, bigger like party, right? About every different country that is pursuing these initiatives. So again, each country is different in their approach, but we like that so many are now pursuing bioethanol, right? Has the solution.
All right, final one for you. What do you want producers to know about the U.S. Grains Council and the work you're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I would just say, again, we are out there. We are moving and grooving. We have, so many on-the-ground experts that are really working and advocating for your product. So, again, it's a multifaceted, really robust product that we have. And so we're always looking, I think, to our domestic partners to give us the tools that we need, right? To like advocate for your story. So we are only as good as our information. We're only as good as like what the most, you know, recent up-to-date, you know, products or technologies are. So let us know, reach out to us, like help us help you so that we can go out and really bear that standard that we have.
Well, if you want to learn more about the U.S. Grains Council, you can actually do it online, grains.org, and you'll find everything to do with the U.S. Grains Council. Mackenzie, thanks for your time. Will you come back and see us?
I sure will. Thanks, Tony.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
I'm not being a jerk here. It's not that I feel I can prove that there was no discussion about it, because my brothers and sisters on the left, there's this absolutely duplicitous thing going on here in Washington. Can you imagine that? Where I will have conversations with some of my Democrat colleagues when there's no camera around or reporter around. And they understand that they know it's immoral not being willing to talk about Social Security. And in less than, 9 years, the trust fund is gone. Our brothers and sisters who are 65 and up take a 25% cut in their check. And therefore, the United States will double senior poverty. That's immoral. And yet we had a president get up behind that podium during his State of the Union say, you're not allowed to talk about, and we're not going to touch Social Security. Okay. And we all applauded, but the cruelty of that is great politics. And in 9 years, we double senior poverty because of our unwillingness to tell the truth about the math. That's not feelings, it's math. And it also has this little ethical overtone. It's immoral what we're doing, but it's good politics.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA Annual Convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Mackenzie Bobine with the U.S. Grains Council online, grains.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
So far this year, only one quarter of typical U.S. acreage has burned in wildfire. Put another way, in 2023, almost 875,000 acres have burned to date versus the 10-year average at this time of under 3.5 million.
Because we had such an abundant, bounteous wet season across the West, it has taken a few extra weeks for things to start drying out, especially in the higher elevations.
But USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says with multi-week extreme heat in the southwest quadrant of the country and that high pressure now covering much of the West.
Across the Southwest, we have seen a small explosion of wildfires, notable uptick in the Southwest in certainly the last week or two.
Likewise, wildfire activity has also begun in parts of the interior Pacific Northwest.
So even though things are getting off to a little bit later than normal start, we still do expect to see an active wildfire season for the late summer period across much of the western United States.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.